I'm right. The podcast that uncovers the origin stories of some of the biggest names in sports, media, entertainment, entrepreneurship, business, and so much more. Nick Durst here along with Joe Calabrese. And Joe, our guest today, she checks many of the boxes as far as the type of guests we've had on the program before.
Absolutely. She's a consumer tech expert, one of the leading women in the field of tech, an Emmy Award-winning TV personality, an MC, a host. You may have seen her on the Today Show, the Rachel Ray Show, the Weather Channel, CBS Sports Radio. She's done a lot of media appearances, and now she's going to be a future former guest on UNRM Right. So we will welcome Katie Lindendahl to the program. Katie, good afternoon. Welcome. How you doing?
Thank you, boys. It's a pleasure to be joining you. I'm in good company, too. You're amazing guests. Obviously, I'm very partial to DA over now on SiriusXM. It's so weird to not say he's over on CBS Sports, but I'm glad we got connected through him.
Absolutely. She did her homework. DA, good friend of the program. Like a lot of people who work at CBS Sports, CBS Sports Radio, former guests. So like I said, Katie, very soon you will be a former guest. But let's start with
current
you.
Current guest right now.
Current guest, future former guest. But growing up, what was your major interest in? Was it sports? Was it tech? Is there anything else you wanted to do?
It was sports and tech. You know, I feel like I have this weird Venn diagram. It's like my amount of crossover and music too, which I'll hop into briefly. But I have always been a huge fitness gal my whole life. Big runner, big strength and conditioning. Formerly was training with the CrossFit champion of the world, my good friend, Kerry Pierce. Sports is just like ingrained in my family, like diehards, Buffalo Bills, Boston Celtics, diehard on the sports side. We'll get into my life at ESPN, which was critical to my career and just integral, I should say, to my career. And then I was such a nerd. Like I was a nerd before it was cool and a nerd ahead of my time. I started like really getting into software systems when I was around 12, 13 years old and just like coding. Like back days, it was like hard line coding, but the harder way. Nowadays, you just hop into Squarespace and Wix and like make your own website. We didn't have it that easy back then, but I started getting really into IT. I got my background in IT. And when I was at the Rochester Institute of Technology, where I was getting my degree, my worlds collided and I started hosting a sports show on ESPN2. And it was like perfect because I got to do the editing. I got to learn how the camera operation works. So like the nerdy side of me met the sports side of me. And so it really, really began with my career, if you will.
So you went to the Rochester Institute of Technology. How difficult was it getting that first job coming out of college? Because as Nick and I know, we worked media. Nick went to St. John's. I went to Marist College. Friends who went to Quinnipiac, all known for media programs. But breaking into media now, it has become so difficult. So what was that process like?
I'll never forget it and never forget how blessed and appreciative I am of going through that journey. I think like, you know, you have to struggle and you appreciate that first job and you still appreciate every job is on your journey. But crazy enough, when I was graduating, my first job was getting into, I had to take a sports test, you guys. A freaking sports test. I felt like I was in an interrogation room with like a light on me with like ridiculous questions too. Because people ask me to this day, they're like, okay, but I dropped the ball here. It was for ESPN. So my job was working on SportsCenter. This is what I was applying for right from the bottom up as a production assistant. And this sports test, I'll never forget it because it was such obscure questions like about Marina Navratilova and really deep college questions and like every side, like my weakest links are like NASCAR and golf. Got hit with NASCAR and golf, but it was hard, but I was very prepared the best I could be. And lo and behold, got that first gig at ESPN working as a production assistant and worked my way up. And I love to share that one of the biggest mentors, speaking of just the impact of the media world, was Stuart Scott. And he will forever be a legend, God rest his soul. But he and I were just, I traveled with him on the road for SportsCenter because I ended up being on the road as well as in studio. One of the most amazing people you'll ever met in my life. I miss him. And he was an awesome mentor. But my journey from that moment on at SportsCenter is probably one of the hardest jobs I've ever had in my life, like climbing the ranks at ESPN behind the scenes in Bristol, Connecticut headquarters.
So you have that job with ESPN, you work it behind the scenes, and you're working your way up, as many people do, as a producer, associate producer, and going on and on. So what was it like for you to be able to, how'd you do it to really make that transition to go from just being purely behind the scenes to writing and doing television and doing your stuff with A&E, CBS, Spike TV, and ESPN? And how'd you really get them to like buy in on, yeah, you got to get a voice out there for tech stuff?
Oh, that was the hardest transition to make, is working behind the scenes on Outside the Lines, NBA Fast Break, SportsCenter, their flagship shows, but knowing ultimately through it all that I wanted to be on air and not knowing how I was going to make that transition, because you're not going to just going to make that huge leap, you know, immediately in national TV. And I think that was the most critical part of building my character and knowing how cameras work, knowing how editing works, learning all of the jobs along the way has bettered me in everything that I do. You know, now running my own production company, I think I had like 37 individuals under me this year, and I can't do their job. They're way more talented than I am, but I can understand what they're doing on a surface level, whether it's building graphics or, you know, editing a piece or a montage. And I think that has been instrumental in just being able to have conversations with my team and gaining their respect, because I'll still hop in. If I need to shoot something and get on the DSLR, if I need to edit in, I will hop in there and I can understand every program still to this day. So I think that was like a critical piece to my journey. But it's such a crazy transition, because I knew I wanted to go on air, but to your point, it's like really hard to make that jump. And lo and behold, a part of the story that a lot of people don't know, because they see this like, oh, she's on the, I've been on the stage show for like 10 years as a contributor, and, you know, Rachel Ray and all these glamorous places. And probably one that people didn't know was I started my on-air presence at the Home Shopping Network. It was the first job that I got. And I will hands down say that one was the most difficult of any gig. I'd have to go on air. My agent called me. He's like, big breakthrough happened. It's your first on air job. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm freaking out. I remember taking a call in the conference room at ESPN at the time. I was working in marketing. And he's like, God, you got a job at the Home Shopping Network. And I was like, I felt really deflated. Like, I was like, that's not for me. But it was selling technology and gadgets of like, which is my, you know, what I love to do. And lo and behold, it turned out to be one of the best jobs, the most informative jobs of my career. You have to sell a piece of technology, whether it's like, at the time, it was like the Nintendo, dating myself here too. It was like the Nintendo DS or like a GPS system, anywhere from 2 minutes to an hour talking nonstop. Clearly I'm good at that, but it's because I was spent so much time with these five cameras, constantly switching in your sales in real time. It's so challenging and difficult, but I ended up selling in 2 years. I think it was $20 million. So it was a crazy experience and one that I would never give up. But from there, I ended up being seen on air, and I hosted a show on A&E that you referenced. And then my world in news just kind of took off too, doing tech segments. But having that foundational skill of ESPN, and then the Home Shopping Network of all places, to be able to learn how to work on camera and to know what people want. It was really interesting, very different journey. Nothing's A to B, right? It's like, I'm like, mine's like A to I to Z to all over the place.
How do you stay up to date with what's going on in the tech space? And how do you go about doing your research before you're doing these segments on the news or on the Rachel Rice Show, et cetera?
It is a full-time job to stay on top of, like, tech especially is changing by the day. And it's wild. Like, you know, just coming off of CES, the Consumer Electronics Show, it's the number one tech show in the country, 175,000 people in Vegas. And you're just like scouring the floor. There's like, I think it's like 40 plus football fields full of gadgets and tech that you're like looking through to find what you hope to cover for a few months at least. But my inbox, I'm like embarrassed to say, I am at 205,000 unread emails.
Oof, lucky us, though.
I can literally pull it out of my phone and show you that's like not a lie.
I'm the total opposite. I got to,
they all have to be read.
Yeah, I'm the zero person.
That's me too. I'm a zero guy.
The only thing I'm zero is laundry. I got to think about laundry, you guys. I get like laundry zero.
Listen, doing the laundry is not the problem. It's folding it.
Oh, no, you just kind of halfway the fold. No one knows how to fold good. Come on. Yeah, so it's literally a full-time job. And like from universities to big tech companies to small tech companies, I like to look for the underdogs personally. And that's something that I do, like just referencing CES. I look for the small, like smaller companies that are just got the heart in it and the passion in it. I love to put them on the map. Actually, just before this conversation we're having, I was at one of the recently at a Today Show segment, and I had like five technologies, and one I found kind of out of nowhere, and it is a pair of glasses. They put closed captioning on your face. So if people are hard of hearing, the closed captioning is using augmented reality pops on your face. When I found these glasses, I was like, I know it. Like I've seen so much technology. I know when something's going to hit and I know when it's not. I put them on the Today Show and they were like, I asked them, I just recently came back from a follow-up interview with them. And I said, how did it go? Like, what was the response? And they're like, we were blown away that the power of media in a matter of 60 seconds, how many units, how many emails, they just exploded. And it's almost like a good sense of overwhelm. But, you know, it's just a testament to how powerful a few seconds on a big TV show can do, as you know.
Yeah, that's what everybody, I have some ties where I work closely with some people at Shark Tank. So it's,
yes.
if the infrastructure is not ready to go when the show or anything airs, like, that's it, you're screwed. You're not going to make your sales, you're going to lose. So it's really about that first hour, 2 hours from when something hits on the television stations. And, you know, that's the key. And you're out there, you're influencing these sales. So for you, when you're going on these shows, like Today's Show, Rachel Wright, or the other shows Joe mentioned, which show has the nicest accommodations for you in the green room?
Never asked you that in 20 years. That's amazing. I will have to say, shout out to my girl, Rachel Ray, because
she
hooks you up with your own chef. So like your team comes in and I don't know what like portal you go through. And obviously I love the Today Show too. And the anchors over there have been dear friends of mine for 10 years. But I have to hit the cooking side because I'm like Italian and all we do is eat and talk about the next meal while we're eating, right? Joe's with me on this. So when you go to Rachel Ray, it's like you go through a portal because you're like, you have your own green room, you're in, coming with your team, and these chefs just start bringing in these meals and you're like, what happened? And then we found out that a lot of people don't eat the meals.
Wow.
Like, did they forget how Earth works? Like, bring on the entrees. Like, we eat everything to the point where, like, the doors open. They're like, you got 5 minutes. And we're like, blah, 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 blah. We don't care. No shame.
That sounds like somebody I know.
It's me.
You?
I'm not going to mention any names.
I'm the big eater.
He's a huge eater. He loves the buffets. Can't get enough of himself.
We just went to a buffet yesterday, me and Jeff.
Wait, where'd you go to a buffet? Tell me the story.
Well, I mean, yesterday we just, you know, kept it casual and to the new China buffet, but I do some serious damage down in Atlantic City at the Hard Rock and Borgata buffets. I did a lot of damage the last 2 years in Las Vegas.
Don't sell yourself short. You do food reviews on
I do food reviews, Katie.
And YouTube, and they're awesome. You should check them out.
How did I know this? It's so funny.
Yeah, I think we're gonna have to tag along with you. I'm gonna have to tag along with you to the next Rachel Ray show.
I love people that can eat. We gotta take you to a fair. Are you into fairs?
I'm into it. Yeah, I just, you know, I get out there, use my iPhone, got my mic.
I asked you, you don't like load up on bread at these buffets. You have like a strategy here, right?
He does have a strategy.
This main strategy I always say in the videos is eat the meats and proteins first, because otherwise you're going to fill up on the carbs. So when I go to a buffet, Katie, right away, I don't care if it's a breakfast buffet or if it's lunch or dinner, first thing you got to do, to the carving station, take advantage, go to the high quality, high price meats, carve it up, eat it, eat the steak, eat the chicken, eat the sausage, eat the salmon. And from there, then later on, you can mix in some carbs. I'm not getting bread at the buffet. Maybe I'll try some mashed potatoes, some french fries, some rice. Get the pasta, pizza at the end. And then what I've been doing recently is so yesterday we went to a buffet. It ended up being a brunch buffet. So I ate the meats and everything. And then what I did for my dessert, that's when I had the pancakes, I had the French toast, I had the waffle,
oh,
some ice cream. So that's my strategy. You always do the carbs last. Otherwise, you're going to guess out on the first or second plate.
You guys, I'm obsessed with you. This is awesome. Can we do this weekly? I would have never guessed that at all.
That's could be a new show.
Oh my gosh.
Could be Nick, Joe, and Katie review Nick's buffet videos.
Yes. You literally have a caloric strategy. Meats and protein, then hit it on the back end with the desserts. As yes. You should.
If you go carbs should. First, like, you know, my wife, she loves her carbs. She loves that the buffet is like going for like the carbs, but who does it? Like, you want to try like the bread stuff and the pizza and the pasta.
Yeah.
I just, like when I was a little younger, I was a naive. I'd be like, oh my gosh, I want, you know, this rice. I want this pasta dish. And I'm like full. So I just go at the end.
My problem is if it's not a carb, I'm not interested. I don't do any of these like fad diet. I'm all carbs all the time.
Yeah. I mean, I like the carbs too. But at the buffet, that's how I think they get your money. Like they make their money, they get you in, you eat the carbs and the expensive stuff is sitting there. Same thing at an Italian restaurant. Don't fill up on the bread. You know, that's the thing. At least in my experience.
Oh my word. Didn't see that.
So that's me. That's my background. Food, sports, media, entertainment.
So much more.
Did you see DA when he had on Badlands Booker?
Yeah, chugging drinks, eating hot dogs.
We were trying to break the I didn't know what segment I had walked into that day at CBS Sports Radio. It was their annual show at Bob's Bar, if anyone's familiar. And it was Badlands Booker trying to break his burping record. And yep. I was like, this is my life right now, and I'm here for it. I am here for it.
Very interesting. I've done some minor competitive eating stuff, you know.
Seriously?
Came in second place on a cruise in a hot dog eating contest. And then I once did a pizza eating contest, and I actually think I got robbed because when you think about it, like a pizza, right? You got to eat the crust for it to count as far as this pie.
Oh,
so
yeah.
It was a whole pie, and it was you had 10 minutes to eat as much as you can. So I didn't win because I thought the rules would be you have to eat a whole slice. So the guy who won, he had like 8 pieces, but he didn't have any crust. So I think that's less than, you know, eating.
The hardest part.
Yeah, so I ate like 5, I think, full slices. But I think 5 full slices is like the equivalent of maybe like, you know, 4 non-crusted slices. I don't know. So I was disgusted. And I was
One question on this. Did they weigh it? How was the determining?
They just said, oh, this guy ate the most pizza. But I was like, but all his crust is here. The crust is the hard part to eat the pizza. I could eat 8 slices of pizza without the crust really quickly, very easily. But when you're counting on the crust, that's the heavy part. That's the part that makes it difficult to digest. If you ask like a Badlands Booker or Joey Chestnut, I'm sure they'll tell you the same thing.
It sounds like the same judges from the dunk contest. It was like, you got screwed.
48. 48's a crust.
Yeah, 46. Who throws in a 46? Mac was getting...
True.
I was jacked up on that. Anyways, sidebar.
Yeah. So listen, I'm glad to hear Rachel Ray as the cook. She is living up to her name and mantra and having good food at this stuff. And that's good to know. What about the Weather Channel? Did they hook you up at all? And is there a particular time of year weather wise where there's more like requests for you to come in and do stuff for them?
Yeah, it's such an interesting outlet to work at. I guess if I like zoomed out, people are like, the Weather Channel, huh? Like, what does that fix? And then people always ask me the weather. I'm like, I do technology. Like, I am the last person that's going to tell you like the meteorological forecast. Although all you have to do is say 30%, like 30% chance of rain. You're like, clear. But my favorite thing over at the Weather Channel is the people, because they really are the best in the world. And Jim Cantore, Stephanie Abrams, and they're just... the coolest, Jen Carfagno. They're the most known meteorologists in the world, but they're the most fun people that are up for anything. And they just like, they get outside the box and do wacky segments there. And they're always like interested and intrigued. And they just have fun with the tech that I bring in, because you're bringing in like, you know, neat, unique weather technologies. It's different. They always get behind it. So for me, when I walk through that door, it is the people. And I have to give a shout out to my booker too, Josh, because Josh Wexler has been there for longer than I have. And he's just one of the most amazing people in the world. When you get calls from people that are like, hey, can you come on? And you're like, it's Josh Wexler. Yes. It's like you guys, it's like, you want to be part of the team. You know what I mean? So it's a lot to, people don't realize that the people running the thing behind the scenes are a big part of the show. It's like, if you have that rapport,
yep,
you want to keep like doing stuff together, you know?
Would you ever go out in a hurricane?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Oh, really?
Oh yeah, yeah.
You'd brave the elements?
For sure. You know, I've done some, there's not a lot of us dive reporters in the industry, like scuba diving. And I have like my advanced dive certs, and I have been on some crazy, crazy stories with NASA, Naval Special Forces. And I've gotten stuck in some storms that I was like, oh, I'm totally dead here. Like totally dead. Like those ones were on my own when we probably shouldn't have been out in the water in the middle of the Atlantic. But yeah, I've done my share. I feel like I'm out of cat lives, honestly, but I would totally, I'm amazed by the weather. I don't mess with it. I know it's like how powerful it is, but I'm intrigued by it for sure. Would you go out there?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I would if I was getting paid by the Weather Network or a channel to cover.
It's all dependent on the money.
Nick wants a bag of cash delivered to him before he does it.
Yeah, I get too cold very easily. So I just got to be careful out there in the elements.
No, that's my thing is the cold. I'm all about freezing temps. I grew up in Erie, PA. It's like, you know, sometimes we're hitting the most snowfall in the country a year. So I feel like my body is like built for it.
Yeah, Nick and I are from New York. We're over this. It's 6 months of winter, 6 months of summer. That's it. You don't get to the four seasons anymore, unfortunately. So you mentioned before your relationship with DA. Again, he was a former You Know I'm Right guest. He was awesome. Many guest spots on the Damon and Mandalora show. So how did your friendship start?
DA, I met back, I guess, a decade ago. Isn't that crazy? And there's something, I see why you guys are friendly with DA, because you guys are very just like cool and something special to you. When you go into his studio, you feel like so welcome. And if you're like, you just get a little crazy. Like, I'm honestly, I would often talk, I'm like, how are you guys still on the air? Like, how are you still getting paid and not in like oversighted by legal? Because the antics that they have pulled and just the hospitality and how fun it is. Once I was on one show, it was just like, forget it. We just became instant friends.
And you have your own production company, which you mentioned before. So I want to talk to you specifically about that, because you shoot, you edit, you produce, you work in media. You kind of have to be a jack of all trades now, where you know how to do everything. But starting your own production company is an endeavor, right? Because there's planning that goes into it. You need a business plan. You need to figure out how to fund your company. You need to figure out how to find investors. You need to figure out how to get people on your side, people who are similar minded to you, people that you can work with, finding the right people to employ. So what was it like starting your own production company?
I think one of the biggest milestones of my career was really hard to leave ESPN after like 8 years cumulatively. And once I went out on my own and like got a taste of that independence, but also maintaining that self-discipline that I was taught so well by the corporate side of things, I was like, there's no going back. And once I was like, if I could put the amount of hours into my own company as I did for another company, I think that was a light bulb moment. And you have to hustle. I remember in the early stages of starting my own company, I was like, you get up and you like feel like you're shot out of a cannon. Like you gotta make cash. Like you're screwed. Who's paying the rent? Who's paying your people? Like the hustle is on. And I think, you know, so for some people there is, and it's all subjective. For some people, there's that love of that guarantee and having that everyday job. And that's great. And it's important. Everybody needs to know what they like. But for me, it's like that, figure it out and on to that next project and constantly being excited about new clients and new projects to work on and where we're shooting in the world and what piece we're working on and what new technology we're discovering. So every day for me is very different. I also can say I have like no responsibility. Like I don't have kids, so it makes it a lot easier. And I can just be out on a backpack tomorrow. So it's, but it works for me. And again, to each his own. But when I got that taste of that real freedom of running my own company, there was like no looking back.
Yeah. Running your own company sounds great. And I mean, right now you are giving me some Meryl Streep and Devil Wears Prada vibes.
Which I watched that the other night. It was
and everything.
Oh, why? What is that? What do you mean?
Like the background you got, the coat, the glasses, just like
you've never seen the Devil Wears Prada?
I never watched that. No.
Wow. Yeah,
well, she's a boss. She's the boss in that. She's
wait,
the
wait, isn't she really mean in it?
She calls her out at the end. So.
She's a very stern
businesswoman.
It's based on a real story, obviously. The head of a magazine.
About Anna Wintour.
Right.
Yes. I think, no, I would say how I run my company, though, like, I love to get my hands dirty. Like, we are as a team. No, there's no hierarchy. A lot of my people have been with me for over 10 years. And I'm so proud of that. Like, we'll finish a long day of shooting in negative 20 below in Alaska, filming the Northern Lights as an example. And they're like, are we going out to eat? And I'm like, that's the ultimate, like, you've built, everybody wants to be there, you know? And like, everybody wants to hang out with each other still after a really long day where everybody's cold, everybody's tired. And that's probably one of the things I am most proud of in my business. And it's just treating people, you know, it's just good Christian morals. It's like treating people with respect and how you would want to be treated and being overly generous and saying, hey, I value you and I appreciate you. And it's given back, like, you know, the days that I ask them to work longer hours or be there for me when they have something else going on, they're there. But it's a reciprocity, you know?
Absolutely. And for you, you kind of, you know, spread that message in your stuff with the keynote speaking. So how did that begin for you? And any nerves the first time you got up there in front of the large audience? And because I think, you know, me, I've done some speaking in the sense of like the fireside chats and stuff, or at least been at these events. And, you know, it could be intimidating to be out there and looking at this big crowd.
It's still intimidating. And it reminds me of, you know, I dabble in the music side and it's like getting the reps. You have to get the reps to get the comfort level. It's like, if it's doing something so many times where it starts to become like a familiarity. But the first, second time I really took a stage, a lot of people don't know in Vegas, there's so many ballrooms that are just grandiose. They hold about 10,000, 20,000 people. And that's where I speak a ton at is in Vegas for a lot of amazing tech companies. But one of my first events was 20,000 people live. I thought I was going to die. Like, and it's truly the number one fear is public speaking. And I was like, I have this very interesting relationship with fear. I love being thrown into the deep end. Like, because you have one choice. It's like sink or swim. And it's up to you. And I'm like, let's go. I don't know where it comes from. Maybe it's from being in a military family, but it's like, it is up to you at that moment if you're going to succeed or you're going to fail. And at the end of the day, are people counting on you? Do people want you to succeed? Most often you can boil it down to yes. So I just have this strange relationship with fear and throwing myself out there. And I feel like every time you do it, you're like, oh, wound up, but you're better off for it in the end. And it just builds so much character. And like, even to date, I started speaking in 2008. And that's when I was in 20,000 people live. And then it's just taken off from there. And people are like, you get nervous. I'm like, I feel like if you don't get nervous, you don't care enough. Like, you have to have some form of butterflies and nerves. And of course, over preparation. I've seen a lot of speakers too, as you can imagine, as doing so many speaking events all over the globe. I've seen two people wing it that ever made it. Like, you have to be over-prepared. Don't try to wing it. Be like, you know, over-researched and ready for, and know your content. And it's a victory, you know? And of course you still get nervous and don't ever wing it. If that would be one of the first things I say to somebody, don't think that you're just going to get on a stage and it's going to go great. It doesn't work that way.
Right. Well, listen, you definitely swam. You didn't sink, but I guess that has a lot to do with your scuba diver certification. So you're ready to go for that. Always ready. And now you're dabbling into some new stuff here, your country music career. So tell us about deciding to pursue those dreams to be a singer.
Yeah, you know, honestly, I feel like God gives you one spin on the earth, and like I just want to do as much as I possibly can jam in. And I grew up in a musical family. I was the nerd, obviously. I've shared that side of me, but my dad's a drummer. He's an amazing drummer, and he's way cooler than I am. And so I've been dabbling in music for many, many years, and taking voice lessons since I was in college professionally, and studying at conservatories. And, you know, when the world went upside down for a few years there, I was like, wow, like this is the time. Like, I'm going to put the blinders on. I don't care what anybody thinks or how this is received, but I'm going to start sharing some of my music. And I started working down in Nashville with some of the most incredible musicians and producers that are so insanely talented, and just working with them and bringing my music to a whole other level that I couldn't even imagine. And here we are. I've had the blessing to have quite a few songs hit the country music charts. And my big thing, obviously, being in the world of production, was I wanted to come out hot in the music videos. So we've had multiple videos in the top 10 in iTunes for quite a while across all genres. So that was like, that's a big thing for me, is the music video side. But, you know, it's just like, I feel like each one of us has this talent or this hobby or this like interest that like really gets us fired up. And we're like, we feel such a spark of joy when we're doing it. And like, I encourage anybody that like, no matter how old you are in life or where you're at in your journey, just go for it and don't lose sight of it. Because if it makes you happy, it's just gonna, people are going to see that, and it's gonna like pour out. Like it will work for you, no matter how big or how small you wanna make it. I'm very adamant about like, no matter how old, go for it.
I mean, this podcast started in March of 2020.
There you go.
It's still kicking.
That started before COVID.
Yeah, well, the planning of it started before COVID. The first
I was recording beforehand, before you joined it.
And then I joined and I made it better, right?
Questionable.
Let me ask you a question, Katie. Do you play an instrument?
I do. I dabble in, voice is my number one instrument, if you will. But I dabble in guitar, and I've played piano for quite a few years. But I can't hold a... The guys that I'm surrounding myself and the girls are just the musicians and the talent in Nashville has blown me away. Like, it's just remarkable. But I like to, like, going back to my production, I like to at least have a surfacey idea of what's going on. I was just actually sitting through, like, never done learning. I was just sitting through an intensive music theory course, and dabbled in music theory for many years. And it's like, you gotta at least understand the basics if you're having these conversations with people at the level you are, you know? So constantly still learning. And if there was more hours in a day, I'd play like 50 instruments.
Not enough hours in the day.
No.
Let me ask you another question. Have you ever met Craig Alvin before?
No, I have not.
He's another former guest of ours.
Oh my goodness. You guys have a lineup.
Well, he was the audio engineer for Kacey Musgraves was it Golden Hour, Joe?
I think so. Looks like we got to link them up.
That'd be great. Yes.
Be amazing.
We'll do an intro sting for the show, you know, like a new intro outro, just to give you some options.
I don't disagree. I think it's time, Nick. What do you think?
Depends on who's doing the intro outro.
Nick is a simple person. He likes everything condensed and very short, to the point.
Here's the thing, Joe. No one's going to listen to like a 1 minute intro to get to the podcast. They're going to skip. They're going to just, so.
You got to WWE it. You just got to have a good quick stay.
Yeah. Speaking of WWE, Katie.
Speaking of WWE.
What do you think about WWE always at the forefront now with this tech stuff? I always say move their network to Peacock been. And now Netflix, the big Netflix deal. What do you think?
They have always been, you know, I worked over there for so many years and just kind of got out of the scene, but was so deeply tied into it. And I have always been amazed at their level of production, and they do it, you know, in conversations that I had with Triple H. It's like we were talking about the technology, and I'm like, you know, you're kind of always on the forefront of like what's, and he's like, we kind of like watch and then we hop in. It's almost like the Apple move. It's like Apple comes out and they're like, we came out with, and Samsung's like, we've had that for 3 years. They came out with it at just the right time, didn't they? So I'm blown away by, you know, the AR to the VR. They always hit it at just the right time. But the production quality, and if you've ever been to an event, obviously, pay-per-view or what have you, like years past, it's always been off the charts. Whether you're going to Mania or Rumble, like everything's just top notch.
Yeah, you're speaking our language now.
Or SummerSlam in Nashville, remember, Nick?
Yeah, Joe went to SummerSlam in Nashville.
I went to Nashville 2 years ago.
One of our guests hooked them up with tickets within 24 hours.
Oh, I don't know if I've ever done it. Who was the 4v4 on that year?
Should we make this a quick guessing game, Nick?
I mean, give him multiple choice options, maybe.
What year was it?
2022.
Yeah, 2 years ago I went. It was a former guest of ours. I mean, multiple choice, it's kind of difficult. I'll give you a hint.
Give a few Olympians, because it's one of the Olympians.
Okay, so we've had on Tara Lipinski. We've had on Scott Hamilton. We've had on Ryan Murphy. Who do you think it is?
Oh, I thought you were going to say it was Kurt Angle. I thought we were going to.
I wish it was Kurt Angle.
Oh, it's true.
It's damn true. but it was a former Olympian who now lives in Nashville. He was. I just gave it away. Shit.
Oh, hello. There you go. Yeah,
there you go. My bad. Anyway.
Was that your first SummerSlam? Did you ever do any like other?
I've done multiple events here in the New York area. I've been to.
We're going to see you at WrestleMania, Katie, in April.
I've been to, I forget how many manias I've been to. It's
unbelievable. So Nick, you went to both MetLife, right?
Just the second one.
Oh, just the second one. So I went to the first MetLife show. We're seeing in The Rock was the main event. And then a couple years ago when it was at MetLife, Nick and I went, but we sat with different friends in different areas of the stadium. So we've been to a couple WrestleManias. I've been to multiple SummerSlams, went to Survivor Series twice, one in Madison Square Garden a couple years ago when it was in Brooklyn. But anyway, point being, back to SummerSlam, Scott Hamilton was on our podcast that week on a Thursday. And then mentioned that he had somebody who was a connect in WWE, and he had never been to a wrestling show before. His son had never been to a wrestling show. His son actually plays hockey, very good hockey player. They're huge Predators fans, knows a lot of people who we know who work at NHL Network. So it was just a great conversation. And it ended up me just tagging along. He's like, I'll see if I can get you an extra seat. And lo and behold, he gets me an extra seat. I had purchased my plane ticket to Nashville the next day on Friday, not knowing if I was going to be able to go to the event or not. But sure enough, it all worked out. I stayed for an extended weekend in Nashville. I sat two rows behind the table, and the celebrities that were around me were insane, because it was like Logan Paul that was there having a one-on-one match with The Miz. His guys were there with the podcast. Kid Rock was there. Dwight Howard was there. A bunch of the Tennessee Titans players were there. So Taylor Lewan was there. Derrick Henry, Ryan Tannehill. So everybody was like looking at me because they kind of knew who Scott Hamilton was. You know, it's hard not to recognize him. So everybody was like looking at us like, who's this guy? You know, and then we had the, you know, in my head and everything. And we have pictures and videos of all the events that we've been to. Well, we could show you. It's awesome.
Oh my gosh, how fun. P.S. Scott does so much great philanthropy, doesn't he? Was he talking
about? Oh, yeah.
He's like world renowned for his kindness, that man.
He was truly unbelievable. I had such an amazing day with him, and I loved his son again because you bond over hockey, right? So Nick and I had the connections with the people who work with the network. So there was so much synergy there that day. You know, it was almost like everything worked out perfectly for me that weekend. It was one of the best weekends of my life. You know, it's hard to replicate something working out so perfectly like that.
I love it. I love it.
See, this podcast has done amazing things for Nick and I.
So Katie's got to get to WrestleMania in Philadelphia this year. WrestleMania 40.
Is it Philly this year? Forget it. Oh my gosh, that's the place to see a Mania. Anything in Philly, forget it.
Yeah, absolutely. So anyway,
I even like Overwatch finals in Philly. That was like, didn't know what to expect there. Have you guys ever been to like a esports event? It's like WWE. There's like pyro, and then all you do is watch people like game for like 2 hours, but you start to feel yourself get into it because the production quality is so high. It's a whole other thing. But again, like another great Philly event. If you're a sports fan, you know it's one of the places to be.
The e-stuff is a little above Nick and I. You know, I have friends who are video gamers, and Nick has friends who are video gamers too. But like, that's I guess we haven't even dipped into
you gotta
that
just
area,
go to an
know?
Event just to experience it. Get a hot dog, get a cheese pretzel, just to sit down, watch it. Mind blown. I'm telling you.
All right, Nick. Looks like we have something else to look forward to.
Ask Scott Hamilton for the hookup.
I don't want to keep going back to the well, you know? It's like,
we can ask the Gronkowski brothers because they have a team.
You're right. It's a good idea. Speaking of Gronk, remember when Nick used to do media for a certain Gronkowski brother?
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, well, listen, this is not about me, this podcast.
He's so humble every time I mention it.
I used to do some work for Rob Gronkowski his last season.
That's so random. What were you doing?
I was doing video editing for his social media platforms, game recaps and stuff, press conferences, you know, because got that because we had his brother Chris on the show here.
You doing stuff for the shaker bottle too?
No, I didn't do anything with the shaker bottle. So, but we, you know, we talked about shaker bottle on the podcast with Chris. And then, like I said, in my Shark Tank ties. So I was talking to Chris after, and then I ended up working for the season with Rob. But unfortunately, he retired. So
we've had Chris and Gordy on with us, and both of them were awesome. So we still have this plan eventually where we're going to get all the Gronkowski brothers on with us eventually. You know, fingers crossed there.
Some would say that when I have my head shaved, I look like in the face with like Rob Gronkowski.
You do a little bit. I first thing I notice. Yep.
I got that and Daniel Tosh. Those are my two lookalikes.
But isn't it crazy in our media world how like you do all these random projects? Like, I think it's hard for people. It sounds like we're all over the place, but we get it done. Like, it's just fun to have all these different projects and you're kind of bouncing here, you're bouncing there. It's the way our industry kind of works. Wouldn't you agree?
Absolutely. I mean, when we do the podcast, we've made so many different connections, you know, so it's very easy for us to, I guess, you know, hey, you want to be a guest on our show, but at the same time, it's like, because Nick and I have also that media background and we do, you know, video production stuff, media management, like we could also offer our services.
Amazing.
So I feel like I'm being interviewed in my own podcast today.
Tell me more. Details. See,
hey, listen, she's interested, Nick. Don't be humble. You know, it's okay. You can.
Yeah, I mean, listen, if Katie wants to hire me for her production company, sub it. Not going to turn it.
Well, now I learned all this new stuff that I didn't know about you guys. See, this is why it's a good conversation.
Absolutely. Speaking of football players, you are a Bills fan. You're part of Bills Mafia, right?
Sure am.
Have you ever, one, lit anything on fire, and two, ever gone through a table?
I will not speak for my friends or my presence in any of those said activities, but I never personally went through a table. Listen, it's really cold there, you guys. I've been doing this since I was like 7 years old. But you make it to the first quarter, you can't feel your face, like everything's numb. You gotta keep activities going. You gotta stay warm. We've also just had like a long history too, where we're very impacted fans. So don't, you know, give us some slack.
Yeah, the fix was in this past season. So right. That's what happened there.
What a world. I was just up in Buffalo. I got some Josh's Jack cereal to like eat my feelings and my emotions. I love when I go into hometown territory and there's like all this Bills stuff everywhere, because it's not something you usually see. I get all excited. Hit the gift shops hard. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. One of these days, the Bills Mafia, they're going to be able to really celebrate, I think. Unlike Joe and his fan base, who are probably never going to sniff anything of success. Tell your favorite team, Joe.
I'm a Jets fan. Imagine going out and getting Aaron Rodgers and he gets hurt in the first 5 minutes. How could you not be a cursed franchise, you know?
I was feeling for you on that one.
It's terrible. It's so sad. We had a lot of promise this season.
So predictable.
Yep. That's another reason why Nick and I work so well together. I'm a Yankees fan and I'm a Jets fan. Nick is a Mets fan and he is a Giants fan. But we do share the same garden teams. You know, he's wearing a Knicks hat and he's hasn't been too keen on the Knicks the last 10 years, but got some excitement going on, and we're Rangers fans. But
all
again,
in on the New York Liberty too.
All in on the New York Liberty. There, we went to a game last year. Their game was a lot of fun, to be honest. It's awesome.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Huh.
Good stuff.
I do it all.
We do a lot, you know, but we'll say, I mean, Maybe we got to make the transition over to tech, Joe, because that seems to be where the success money's at.
The money is.
You could be doing your show as holograms. You could be from anywhere in the world.
Yeah, you could put us on like at the next like big Las Vegas conference. So just hologram us up. And
I showed up to two meetings, you guys. Two in my career, and the person was a hologram. I was like,
wow.
And like I was kind of like offended, but then I was kind of like, all right, I see you. That was pretty sick.
It's pretty cool. Where do you think ChatGPT ranks among the best tech inventions of the 2020s so far?
I cover so much AI, and I've covered it since for decades, but it's just become democratized. Like it's in your phone. Like that's just insane to me. And the thing about AI right now, like that blows my mind, is like I work in so many different sectors. I'm from the fintech side, financial tech side, to consumer tech, to you know, even the crypto side. Everybody's talking about AI. Like we're at high level meetings or conferences, and it's like it's integrated everywhere. Like oftentimes I'm like, tech, you have a flavor of the month, and something's hot, then something's not. AI has not gone away, and like ethical AI, I'm all for if you can make your lives better. And there's so much AI that we've been using for a decade that people don't realize it, but I'm just like blown away that the conversation's just accelerating on the AI side.
Yeah, I think it's a great tool and definitely helps everybody. But who knows? There might be some dangers ahead. We'll just have to wait and see what happens there. That's not funny, John. I mean, a lot of people
Terminator style. Robots are coming.
End up losing their professions, losing their careers because of this. So that's what you got to keep an eye out for. But it could also help people as well get ahead in their careers. Katie, for you in your life, for your career, what would you say is your "you know I'm right" moment? What I mean by that is a time or place where you wanted to pursue something, you asked somebody for advice, they said, "Katie, don't do that. That's an awful idea. That's not going to work out." And you're like, "You know what? I'm going to do it anyway." And in the end, you will see why it is that I'm right about this.
Oh my goodness. There's so many. And that's why I say keep the blinders on and just keep going. But I would probably say the music side of my career was a really "what are you doing" moment. And then I like, you know, you make it work. Thanks be to God. And then everybody's like, "Huh, well, that happened. This is happening." But I'm a huge proponent of, I was just saying the other day, it's really important who you surround yourself with too. I think as you start to get older, you always see the memes. It's like you have like so many select people around you. Make sure those are good people that are like amplifying you and like behind you no matter what you choose to do. Because they mark your choices, whether it's like in a store while you're shopping or what you're buying, to like the choices that you make in life. And like, I'm all about the positive, like little circle, you know? So I don't have too many of those, like kind of told you so moments, but I there's from an outside perspective, I know there's people looking in like, what were they thinking? But oh, that worked out. So keep going.
Absolutely. Great last words. Keep going, Katie. Thank you for your time. This was a lot of fun. We really, really appreciate
awesome.
It. What we do here is we always give our guests the last words. So if there's anything else that you have not mentioned before that you would like to mention now, share or promote for yourself, by all means, go ahead. And my one last request here is when you wrap up, in the spirit of The Devil Wears Prada and the spirit of Meryl Streep, I want your very last words to be, "That's all."
Okay, I'll do my best, but we'll see how it goes. So I thank you for the great chat. You guys are amazing. You can follow me obviously on socials at Katie Linendahl. And if I had any final parting words, I would say go Bills, and that's all.
Way to go. Great last words there. I'm hoping the Bills could pull through one of these seasons, as they definitely deserve it. Katie, this has been great. Thank you so much for your time. That's going to do it here for this episode of You Know I'm Right. For our special guest, Katie, my co-host, Joe, I'm Nick, and this has been You Know I'm Right.